Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, August 14th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be gathering around the virtual water cooler and talking about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, let's jump right into what we've been watching. I watched a movie from 1982 called, I think this is how you pronounce the name of this movie, called Tenebrae, written and directed by Dario Argento. And this is like one of the most famous giallo movies out there. And this has been on my list for a long time, like ever since Malignant came out, maybe even a little bit before that. I remember hearing how that movie was very influenced by the giallo movement. There's a lot of like references and nods and winks and stuff like that, homages to that type of filmmaking. And I've seen Dario Argento's Suspiria from 1977, but I don't think I've seen any of his other movies. So this one has been on my list for a while. I kind of love this movie. Do you? I'm guessing as a horror guy, you've probably seen this one, right?
Yeah, I have seen it. It's very good.
Okay, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And then I'm not sort of bonkers there, but I think this movie has like a pretty good reputation. But I was very, very impressed by this. I think it reminded me a lot of Agatha Christie. And I feel like I was reading a little bit about the movie, and there was a lot of people contemporaneously, like when the movie came out, were making that comparison as well. But just the structure of the sort of murder mystery at the center of this story is very, very similar to the type of Agatha Christie formula, but dialed up to 11, you know, with the stylistic flourishes and the like extreme amounts of blood and stuff like that that come into play, especially near the end of this movie. What do you remember from your experience or experiences watching this film?
Yeah, I just remember it's very vivid. It's very colorful. It's sort of like the trademark of the subgenre, I guess you could say. And it's so stylish. And it just has this, like, I want to say all of them because I haven't seen all those movies, but a lot of Argento's movies had this almost like dreamy, hazy quality to them. Like they're almost like shot through this like hazy filter. I think it's just like the style of the time. And it just it makes the whole thing feel like extra, almost like dreamlike in a way.
Yeah. One other thing that I wanted to mention real quick that I really appreciated about this film, the lead actor, his name, I think, is Anthony Franciosa. And he just seems like a normal guy. Like everybody in this movie actually just feels like a normal person, as opposed to if they would remake this movie now, the lead actor would be jacked in some way. You know, it just seems like how it is. But this movie came out in the early 80s. It was shot on location for the most part in Rome and in some studios as well, but normal looking people. And it's very refreshing to go back in time and watch movies like that where people don't look like models all the time. So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. But this is a really, really fun movie. It's basically the quick pitch of the plot is it's about this American writer who he writes novels, and he flies over to Rome to do a little bit of a press tour for his latest book and to sort of hole up and start work on his next book. And almost instantly, as soon as he gets there, people start dying in ways that are very similar to the ways that characters have died in his book. And like people, there's a killer, a mysterious killer who is leaving him messages at the scene of the crime and things like that too. So this guy, this author just gets sort of embroiled in this series, this string of murders, and everything plays out from there. So it's a really fun movie. So I would highly encourage people to check it out. It had some twists and turns that I definitely did not see coming. So Tenebrae, I watched it on the Criterion channel if you want to check that out. I also saw Bowfinger for the first time. Have you seen this movie, Chris?
I did. Yeah, I saw it when it came out. Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea how I've never seen this movie. It came out in 1999, and I love Steve Martin. I love Eddie Murphy. I have no idea why this one passed me over for all of this time. Frank Oz directed this film. I didn't even realize that when I turned it on to watch it, but it had been on my list for a long, long time. And I think Ryan had mentioned on a podcast episode 5 or 6 months ago or something that this was one of his favorite movies, and he was really trying to encourage me to check it out. And I finally got around to watching it, and I love this movie too. I was so happy to see that, like, this feels like a true one of those rare experiences where like a movie comes along that just hits you in all of the right ways. And I feel like if I would have seen this when I was 15 or something, that it would have been one of my favorite movies of all time. You know, like there's just something about the comedic wavelength of this film that I was very much on board with what it was doing. Eddie Murphy is so funny in this. Like, he plays multiple roles, and the one of the characters that he plays is named Jif. I don't know if you remember this, Chris, but
yeah.
The physicality that he brings to that performance, which is just so transformatively different than the sort of main action hero type of character that he's playing in his more normal Eddie Murphy persona, is just so impressive to see him switch back and forth between those roles and play these sort of occupy spaces, these different characters. Steve Martin is hilarious in this movie. It's so well written. And I mean, maybe there's like a couple things in here that don't particularly age super well, but like, it's hard to judge that because this movie came out in 1999, which feels like many lifetimes ago in the scale of the spectrum of comedy and what's acceptable now and all that kind of stuff. But it had its head and heart in the right place for the most part. So just a really, really fun experience. If you are like me and you've never seen Bowfinger, do what you can to remedy that. I believe it's streaming on Prime Video right now if you want to check that out. What are your memories of Bowfinger, Chris? Do you like this one?
Yeah, I remember liking it. I haven't seen it since it came out, which feels like a long time ago, but I remember enjoying it when it came out. I remember just finding it very fun. I love Steve Martin. I love Eddie Murphy. So the two of them together is like it's a good recipe. It's a recipe for hilarity, you could say.
Yeah. So. And it's about people getting together in Hollywood and making a movie. Like, these people like sort of scrappily trying to put together a production, basically using whatever means they have necessary or whatever. So it's one of those films that reminds me a little bit of Tim Burton's Ed Wood. It reminds me also of One Cut of the Dead. I don't know if you ever saw that film, where there's like just this spirit of camaraderie and like genuine love and appreciation for the art of movie making, even though it's kind of a bunch of schmucks getting together to do it, you know? So it's I just love that that through line, I guess, that connects those three movies that I mentioned there. So really, really fun stuff. There's some great like digs at a Scientology-esque company or religion or cult or whatever you want to call it in this film called I think it's called Mindhead. Really great stuff. So Bowfinger, I would say it's a classic now to me, even though I'd never seen it before. What have you been catching up with, Chris?
Yeah, I got a bunch of stuff, so let's go through it. I saw, of course, Deadpool and Wolverine, which I reviewed for us, and you know what, these movies are just not for me. I did not love the first Deadpool. I actually liked the second one. I thought that was like better than the first one. I was like, oh, this is surprisingly good. But this one is just, just wall to wall cameo fest. And it just felt like there was nothing to it. And I did not laugh at the jokes. And you know, that's fine. You know, this movie made $1 billion. It doesn't need my approval. It was not for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I actually liked Hugh Jackman in it, and I think you
did. He's really good in this. He's like much better than the movie deserves. He's like giving it his all. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll link to your review in the show notes if people haven't read that yet, so they can check that out. But yeah, I think you and I were on the side of the, you know, in terms of the folks at Slash Film, who there seemed to be a big line drawn down the middle of the staff of people who were a little disappointed by this movie and people who were sort of more head over heels for it. So you and I were definitely on the same side on that one. What else have you been watching?
I saw Twisters, and I'm sad to say I did not like Twisters.
Oh, no.
I really love the original Twister. I don't think it's like a good movie, but it's so much fun. And this one felt like it took itself too seriously. Like, it's a movie about people chasing tornadoes. It should not be this dour. Mm. It also just feels like, I don't know, just something was off about, like, the way the tornadoes were shot. The way they're shot in that first movie is exciting. Like, it's not like real. You're never like, that's a real tornado, but you're like, it's exciting and thrilling, and you get wrapped up in the VFX of it all and the characters going into it. And that's the other thing. Like, I love the characters in the first movie. They're all sort of memorable in their own quirky ways, and they're all played by really good actors, like Philip Seymour Hoffman is in it. And I did not like care at all about these characters. Like, the tornado hunters in this movie, I found like really obnoxious when they pull up and they're just going like Yahoo like every 5 seconds. I'm like, oh my god. And it really bugged me that the movie has like a wall-to-wall soundtrack of like country songs, which is not like the first movie at all. The first movie has a really cool engrossing score, and this one, like, anytime they drive into a tornado, they're like blasting country songs. I'm like, what is this? Like, I don't like this at all. You know, Glenn Powell, great. Glenn Powell is a charming guy. He's really good in this. I thought Daisy Edgar Jones was really bland, and I felt like she had no chemistry with Glenn Powell at all. So I know people were like upset when they revealed it, like, oh, they cut a kiss scene between them, but like, that didn't bother me because I never once bought them as like a romantic pairing, you know. I'm sorry to say I did not like Twist. I really wanted to because I really like the first movie, but this just did not do it for me.
I just saw somebody say that they thought that Glenn Powell's character slept with Maura Tierney's character.
Yeah.
What's her name? He had more chemistry with Daisy Edgar Jones's character's mom than he actually did with Daisy Edgar Jones's character.
Yeah, definitely. So. I agree with that. Yeah.
Well, that's a shame. I'm sorry that you didn't like that movie, Chris. I thought it was fun. I definitely did not enjoy it as much as the first film. You and I both share a love for that one. So we'll always have Twister, Chris, 1996. Yeah. But tell me about the next thing you saw.
So I watched Skywalker's A Love Story, which is a movie I remember you talking about. Was it Sundance, right? You watched it from Sundance? Yeah.
Yep.
And I really liked this, man. This is about two crazy people who climb really tall buildings. And as the title suggests, it is a love story. It's about them like falling in love and learning to trust each other and learning to do crazy stuff. And I kind of want to like go into a spoiler detail, because like the ending is like the final stretch of the movie is like the most enjoyable part of the film. Like the end of the movie is them, it's in Malaysia, right? The building?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, they want to climb into they want to go to the very top of this insanely tall skyscraper in Malaysia and like pose on top. Like, their whole thing is they climb the top of tall structures and they take photos of themselves and they go viral. And they also somehow get like sponsorship doing this, which blows my mind. Because like, why would you like... Because they literally show footage of like other people doing this and dying, like falling to their deaths. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why would you want your like logo on someone who like fell to their death? Like, that's like crazy to me that like companies are like, yes, we should pay people to wear our shirt that they might fall.
And it's also illegal. Like, they have to break into these buildings and like perform these elaborate maneuvers to get up on the roof and stuff. So these companies are basically sanctioning this behavior by paying them to do this. It's really wild. So yeah, what Chris is talking about, the sort of setup for this movie, is laid out in the opening minutes of the film, But I do think we can get into some spoiler stuff. This movie is available on Netflix right now. It's called Skywalker's A Love Story. So I encourage people to check that out. There's some incredible footage in it. If you've not seen the movie yet and you want to, fast forward ahead a few minutes. And then, Chris, we can talk freely about what happens at the end now.
Yeah. So what I really love about the ending is, so the ending is they go into this building and it takes them days to get to the top. Because at one point, they end up getting trapped because like workers come in, and the whole thing is like Malaysia is a very strict country, and if they get caught, they'll get sent to jail for a very long time. So there's a point where workers come in and they end up hiding behind this box. I think it's like they hide for like 36 hours. It's more than a day. It's an insanely long time, and they're stuck in place. And eventually they do make it to the top of the building, and there's this whole thing. They want to do this, like, basically like the dirty dancing pose where the guy elevates the girl above him and she's like stretched out. And there's a whole thing where she's like afraid to do it, which is understandable because Jesus Christ, like, why would you want to do this? And his whole, he's like, you know, I'm not going to drop you. And what I loved about this ending is they finally pull it off. They get their photos, and then they just stroll out of the building like nothing, like they own the joint. And I was like cackling at this development because there's so much build up to them like getting to the top and getting trapped and whether or not they're going to do it. And then they just like walk out the front door because they put on like hard hats and act like they're working there. And I was like, this is so enjoyable. And, you know, even though I think these people are, you know, certifiable for what they do, I really like them as people. Like, I really bought into them at their whole love story and how they're, you know, they grow to trust each other. And, you know, the whole thing where he's like in guaranteeing her he won't drop her, even though like you can't really guarantee that, and she has to like trust him to hold her up. And I got like oddly like emotional watching this. And also like the footage is insane that they get. Like I watched this at home on Netflix and I got dizzy like on my couch. I can't imagine like literally doing this. Like it's genuinely not. And like,
yeah,
they're like wearing like sneakers and shit. Like they're not even like wearing like gear. I'm like, this is insane. Like how do these people do this?
Yes. Yeah. So I was thinking a lot about Free Solo when I was watching this movie. And yeah. I think to me, this movie suffers in comparison to Free Solo because Free Solo is about this guy who decides to do, you know, to climb El Capitan in Yosemite National Park without any ropes or assistance or whatever. But he's like out there doing this super dangerous thing. And if he falls and dies, it's basically like, you know, he would be out there doing this anyway. And there's nobody there to suffer with him. He's doing this as like an isolated thing. And these people in Skywalker's A Love Story are doing this over a city. So like if they fall and die, they're going to traumatize, if not outright kill, anybody who is down there below them. Like, can you imagine just walking down the street in wherever, Malaysia, New York City, whatever Russian cities they're in where they're doing this stuff. And then just somebody just at whatever, 100 miles an hour comes splatting down on the sidewalk next to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it would just be like the most traumatic thing imaginable. And they never once think about the fact that they could kill innocent people when they're doing this stuff. They seem to me to be doing it all for like social media clout, which is just kind of gross, you know?
Yeah.
So I have like real conflicted feelings about this movie because I kind of, I think that the love story at the center of it is cute and you know, they seem like they genuinely care for each other and all that kind of stuff. I was like invested in on that level, but I kind of feel like they're terrible people because they're not interested in the rest of humanity. They just seem super interested in themselves and their own accomplishments, and that's it. But like you said, the footage is so incredible that it's like, it's hard to deny this movie and in on that level. So I don't know. Did you ever think about that? Did that stuff bother you at all? Or is that just me being weird about
it? You know, it's tricky because I don't disagree with you, but I actually had that problem with Free Solo in that.
Oh, interesting.
You know, for lack of a better term, I felt like that guy was kind of like a sociopath.
Yeah,
like
there's
a part in that movie where like near the end, he just decides to go and he doesn't like tell his girlfriend he's going. Like she just wakes up and he's gone. And it's like, what a crazy thing to do. Like, not tell that, like, that the relationship in Free Solo felt like really bad to me. It felt like she, I'm sorry, I don't remember their names, but like, it felt like she was really in love with him and he did not care about her at all. And again, this is all like how the movie portrays him. Like, for all I know, there's more to the story, but that's the implication I got was that this guy does not care about anyone or anything. He just wants to climb mountains. And she was like in love with him. And he just like goes off to climb. He doesn't even like say goodbye to her. Like, what if he fell to his death? Whereas, I don't know, these people seem like they genuinely care about each other. And again, it's also about editing and how the movie portrays them. Because for Skywalkers, there's some moments where it's very clearly they're like goosing the narrative a little bit. Because there's like multiple scenes where you see... I keep calling her the girl. What are their names? I should look this up.
Vanya is the guy, and Angela, I think, or Angela. I don't remember how they pronounce it. But yeah, Skywalkers, those are the
characters. So, I'm looking at her. Yeah, her name is Angela or Angela. So there's like multiple shots where you see her wearing like a cast on her arm, but then later in the movie they show her like falling, and then she gets the cast, and they make it like a big plot point where they're like, "Oh, can she climb with this cast?" And it's like, well, she clearly had that cast on in other scenes before this, so you're clearly like deliberately altering the narrative to make a more like compelling narrative, which, you know, I understand why you would do that, but it does make me wonder how much of it is like out of order, how much they edited it together to make it, you know, tell this cohesive story. So again, like, you know, you're not getting the whole story with it, you know, even though it's a documentary, it's still being edited, it's still being shaped to tell a narrative. So, you know, I'm sure there's more to it than meets the eye, but I don't know, I really bought into the fact that these two care about each other, and they approach this as a kind of like art, which I, you know, while I would never do it, I kind of appreciate that. Like, I appreciate like the idea of like they're doing this as like a form of expression. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all I know is I will never climb a mountain, I will never climb a building. So I, you know, I can never fully relate to either of these people, but I really dug this.
This is a really cool heist movie, you know, when you think about it through those terms and that lens, like the way that they lay out their, it's just like Ocean's 11, basically. Like they scope out this gigantic 100 and whatever story tower, and they like have their plan, and then like things go wrong, and it's just like it's a heist movie in real life, basically. And their heist is, can we get this footage from the top of this building that we're not supposed to get, instead of stealing $1 million or whatever it is. So it's a really interesting movie, a lot to chew on. Skywalker's A Love Story is the name of it, and it's streaming on Netflix right now.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over 1 million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What else have you been watching, Chris?
I finally saw The Fall Guy, which was out in theaters. I'm sorry to say, I did not like this either.
Oh no, man! I love that movie.
I don't know, man. Like everyone I talk to, you know, on this that we work with and so on, talk this movie up, and I found it just. First of all, it's way too fucking long. Like, why is this over 2 hours? And there's like an extended cut, which I did not watch. I can't imagine this being any longer than it is. The jokes did not work for me at all. First of all, there are no jokes in the movie. It's just endless riffing. And I'm kind of sick of this in comedies. Like, can we please hire joke writers again? Can we hire people who actually write comedy? Like, there's the comedy in this movie is just endless characters riffing. And I don't know, it just goes on and on. You know, Ryan Gosling, great. I love Ryan Gosling. He's really charming in this. But I'm sorry to say, I did not care for this at all, honestly. I did not find it fun. Wow. I wanted to. It just feels like there's a lot of like really boneheaded decisions, like the way they edited it together. Like there's this whole part where Ryan Gosling is in this big car chase and it keeps cutting back between him and Emily Blunt doing karaoke. Mm-hmm. And I found this scene like painfully constructed. Like for one thing, even though it shows her doing karaoke, they don't use her singing. They use like the actual song, which is like, why not just use her singing like over the action? Like the whole point is she's singing the song. Why do they keep cutting out her voice? And the other thing is like, every time it cuts to her doing karaoke, it ruins the momentum of the action. I just kept thinking about how like a filmmaker like Edgar Wright could have found a way to do that and make like the action flow better. Edgar Wright, I think, is really underrated as an action filmmaker. Like he's known as a comedy guy, but he's really good at staging action scenes in a way that they flow in this sort of like enjoyable heightened way, and I feel like if he had directed this, it would have been like a better movie. Like I don't know, I don't dislike David Leitch, but I did not like this. I wanted to, but I did not. I'm sorry to
well,
say.
Well, look, you're not going to get any arguments from me that this movie would have been more entertaining if it was directed by Edgar Wright over David Leitch. Like this is, I like this more than I like a lot of David Leitch's stuff, but I feel like it's because there's a genuine passion for the stunt community that actually comes through in this movie. And I thought like some of the stunt stuff was actually pretty entertaining. For me, the big joy of the movie was the cast, and like they've really elevated, you know, kind of okay material into something that I thought was really enjoyable. I love the chemistry between the leads, and I actually did think it was funny. So I think that's the huge difference. Like, you know, when you go into a movie like that and it just doesn't work for you on a comedic level, you've kind of lost the battle already right there. So it's a really, really tough hill to climb to get you back on the movie side if that, you know, such a huge part of the film like that doesn't really work for you. So yeah, man, that's a bummer. I'm sorry to hear that that this one didn't work for you, but I totally get it, because what I wish we could do is just go into an alternate universe for a second where we get to see Edgar Wright's version of The Fall Guy, because that sounds really fun. So
it also just struck me as like a really confused movie. Like there's so many subplots. Like why are there so many subplots in this movie? Also, like the main, like I can't figure out if the movie understands what it's doing with its movie within a movie. Like the movie within a movie, the movie that Emily Blunt's character is directing is terrible, but the movie kind of makes it imply that it's supposed to be good.
Right.
Like there's this whole thing where Ryan Gosling is like, your movie is going to inspire other little girls to become filmmakers. And they talk about how the movie was a huge hit and everyone loved it. I'm like, do these characters think this is a good movie? It's atrocious. Like, it's atrocious. I don't understand. Like, I was just really baffled by some of the decisions. I don't know.
Yeah, I will definitely give it to you that the whatever it was called, Metalpocalypse, or what, I don't even remember the name of the movie now, is very, very heightened and silly and like looks pretty terrible. But like, I guess it was just an excuse to, because the movie itself, The Fall Guy, gets a little heightened at times, I feel like they kind of had to do something outrageous for the movie within the movie to draw a clear line between the tones and like distinguish, okay, this is clearly like not realistic and fake and sci-fi and truly over the top, whereas like some of the actual action that happens in the movie is pretty over the top, but they want it to be like, I don't know, grounded or believable in the real world or whatever. So,
and that's fine, but it's like, don't try and convince me this movie is good. Like, don't, like, don't, like, I'm all for people making a movie that turns out to be bad in, you know, in the world of the movie. You know, you just talked about Bowfinger. That's a good example where it's like, but it's like, don't then, it just felt like the movie didn't want to like be mean, I guess. Like it didn't want to be like, oh, Emily Blunt's character actually made a shitty movie. And it's like, it's okay to do that. Like, you don't have to like lie and make it act like you don't have to be like, oh, she made this inspiring action. Like, no, it stinks. Anyway.
So you wouldn't pay money to go see Chubby Rain in theaters?
I mean, I would, but I'm not saying it'd be a good movie.
Okay, what else have you been watching?
So I saw Trapped, the latest M. Night Shyamalan movie, and man, I loved this. I'm in the tank for M. Night Shyamalan at this point. Every once in a while, he'll have a misfire, like Glass. I did not like Glass, but I'm proud to say I've stuck by M. Night Shyamalan's side, even when a lot of people turned on him. Like, you know, at the he reached a point in his early, like the first half of his career, I guess you can call it, where people sort of gave up on him. And I was like, no, I think he still got it. And then, you know, he made The Visit, which was sort of like his big comeback. Then he made Split, which was the even bigger comeback. We talked about this. We did a whole podcast about this. So I won't go on anymore. But I've always sort of like been in his corner. He's from Philadelphia. I'm from Philadelphia. So that I sort of feel like this weird like kinship with him. Like anytime, because almost all his movies are set in Philadelphia. And when he shoots in Philadelphia, I'm just like, hell yeah, I know where that is. You know, just like, it's just fun. It's like a nice connection with him. So I've always been on his side, and I really dug this movie. I will say, even though this is set in Philadelphia, it was shot in Toronto, and it really shows. Like, if you've ever been to Toronto, the architecture of Toronto is very distinct. And so every time they show like the outside, it's like, that's Toronto. Like, I don't understand why you didn't just go to Philadelphia and film it since the movie is set there. But that's, you know, that's a minor
tax problem. Reasons, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the reason. Yeah. But I dug this a lot. And I got to say, you know, I've seen a lot of people say they like the movie up until the third act. I think the third act is like the most enjoyable part of the movie, honestly. Like, it works for me. It's when the movie goes... It's when the movie gets like really goofy, but I appreciated the goofiness. I don't know. I really liked it. Josh Hartnett is killing it in this movie. I'm so glad he's like having this comeback, because he's really selling this character of this, you know, goofy serial killer dad. He's just like, he's doing a really good job in the role, and he does a really good job making the character likable until he's not. Like, you know, there's like the end of the movie sort of like twists the knife and makes it like, all right, this guy actually is a monster, but he plays it so well. And so, yeah, I really dug this. I am. M. Night, keep doing what you're doing.
Well, I'm thrilled that you liked it, Chris. My feelings about Trap have been well expressed on this podcast, so I won't drag this out any longer. But yeah, Trap in theaters right now. Check it out. I want to say everybody who talked about it on the spoiler episode that we did gave it like a 6.5 out of 10. And we all had like wildly different takes on what that meant. But what would you give it if you had to give it a number grade, Chris?
Probably like a 7 out of 10, okay. Probably. Like, yeah.
I don't think it's pretty close then.
Yeah. I don't think it's like perfect. It's not like my favorite M. Night movie, but nobody's doing it like M. Night right now. When I watch an M. Night movie, it's like, this is a movie that loves being a movie. And there's something like refreshing about that. Like, I don't know. It's just like, he's really engrossed in where he puts the camera and how he shoots his actors. And you know, you could argue that like, oh, his dialogue isn't believable. And I'm not going to say it is, but I kind of think that's the point. Like, I feel like a lot of people don't realize this movie in particular is supposed to be funny. Like, he's deliberately making a funny thriller. Like, he wants you to laugh at stuff. And I feel like people are like missing that. They're like, this is silly. It's like, well, it's kind of supposed to be silly. Like, he's not like, I don't think he sat down and was like, this is a very serious movie about a serial killer at a concert. Like, I don't think that ever crossed his mind. I feel like a lot of people are missing that.
Yeah, I think I might have been one of those people. But there's something a little off about him. And I feel like it's a wavelength thing, too, where like there are people who are complete, as you said, in the tank and just like totally understand and get the humor that comes across in those movies. Whereas like in other movies, I feel like it's easier for me to identify when the filmmaker wants me to laugh at something and when they're taking it seriously. And because that line is a little blurrier with M. Night Shyamalan, for me personally, like, I feel like my personal indicator, it leaves me wondering more about the movie and its intentions and like has me kind of reeling a little bit. Whereas other people, I feel like their indicators are more dialed in to what he's doing there. So I think that may explain part of that. But
yeah, my final word on this is like everyone right now is saying, who cares if Deadpool and Wolverine is a quote unquote goo movie? It's a fun movie. And I had a million times more fun watching Trapped than I had watching Deadpool and Wolverine. So that's my final word on the film.
Excellent. Okay. Give me a little tease about Alien Romulus. I think we're going to devote Friday's show to a spoiler discussion about that, but you had a chance to see the movie already and the review embargo, I think, is up by now, right?
Yeah. Lifts today. Okay. My review, it will be on slashfilm.com. This movie is okay. It's very much The Force Awakens of the Alien franchise, although I really like The Force Awakens and I don't like this that much. But this is very much a movie just full of like callbacks and Easter eggs and stuff where it's like, remember this from the other Alien movies? And I found that really disheartening because I'm on record as saying I genuinely think there are no bad Alien movies. I'm not counting the Alien versus Predator movies because they don't count. They don't count in my mind. But of the main Alien movies, I think they're all sort of worthwhile. And what I appreciate about them is no two are the same. Like, all of the Alien movies are really distinct. Like, yeah, they all have, you know, the xenomorph in it, and, you know, they all have similar details, but they're all very different. The first one is a very slow burn horror movie. The second one is an action movie. Alien 3 is this like weird dark drama, you know, set in this prison world. Alien Resurrection is really strange and over the top. I know people are really mixed on the two prequel movies, but I really appreciate how different they are, like, even from one another. Like, even though they were made by Ridley Scott, they're both like directly connected, they both feel like very different movies. So I really appreciate how the Alien franchise is so adaptable, and this movie completely blows that up. And it's just like, well, this is a bunch of stuff you've seen in the other Alien movies. And I just found that disappointing. Like it kind of like ruins the vibe, you know. It's like, oh, we were like, why, you know, I don't want to see the same thing over and over again. I want something different, and this movie does not want to give you something different at all. It very much wants you to be the Leo pointing meme where you're just pointing at the screen and being like, remember that? Like, like, there are scenes where characters literally repeat lines from previous Alien movies, and I found that really distracting. It's almost like they watched the Alien movies and are quoting it. It's like, I don't need this to be like a pat on the back sort of thing. I don't need the movie to reference the other movies. I just want a good movie, you know.
So let me ask you this. This movie is set between the events of the first Alien and James Cameron's Aliens, and for somebody who's just seen those movies and like maybe saw Prometheus or something like that, do you think that the references that you're talking about would detract from the experience for that hypothetical viewer? Or are only the people who are like hardcore into this franchise going to have that issue with the movie? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I genuinely anticipate people like enjoying this, just being like, it gave me what I wanted. I wanted something familiar. And, you know, I'm not saying you're wrong if you like the movie that way, but I don't know. We should.
Because, like, is it effective on just a like, I don't know, spooks and scares and like kills and like stuff like that?
It's not really. Like, the characters are really bland. Like, Kaylee Spaney, I think, is a good actor, but she has like nothing to do in this movie. Like, her character is not memorable at all. You know, you watch that first Alien, all of those characters are very distinct. I mean, it helps that they're all played by really great, like, character actors. Mm-hmm. You know, you got Harry Dean Stanton in there, you know, you got Yaphet Kotto. You know, those are people who are, like, at the top of their game. And you know, in the first, like, I'd say, like, 20 minutes of that first Alien, you know everything you need to know about who these characters are, how they behave, what their motivations are, you know. And even like the Ripley character, who sort of doesn't really come into her own until like the back half of the movie. Like that, you know, that first movie is set up to make you think that Tom Skerritt's character is sort of like the main character. He's the captain of the ship. Mm-hmm. And then it slowly becomes apparent, like, oh, Ripley is actually the main character. And, you know, you kind of like really lock onto those characters. And, you know, that doesn't happen at all in this movie. Like, there's not like a single character where you're just like, I'm rooting for this character. I'm not saying like, I want them all to be horribly killed by the alien, but I don't know. It's just like,
yeah. They don't have that twister thing from the original movie is what it sounds like, right?
Yeah, it's just missing something. And I don't know. Like, you know, I'm not saying like I need this movie to be a certain way for me to enjoy it, but even on its own, it just is not doing a good job. Like, it's fine. I don't want to say like it's a bad movie because it's not. It's just not. It's not as good as it could have been.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll have a spoiler conversation about that on Friday. Maybe you can join us for that, Chris, if you're available. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the last movie that you watched. This is one I've never seen before. Tell me about it.
Yes. So I watched Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, which is a 1973 Western directed by Sam Peckinpah. The Criterion Collection just put out a new release of this, and I got that. And I had never seen this before. And oh my God, this is like one of the best movies I've ever seen. This movie is so good. It's, you know, it's this like almost anti-Western in a way. It's this like somber, melancholy, mournful sort of like Western about like the end of the old West. And it's about, Kris Kristofferson is Billy the Kid, you know, the famous outlaw. And if you know anything about history, you know the story about, you know, Pat Garrett was a guy who used to be friends with Billy the Kid, and he was eventually hired to track him down and kill him. If you've seen the Young Guns films, you know that story, because that's they have similar plots. And so this movie is about that. It's about how Pat Garrett, who's played by James Coburn, is tasked with tracking down his old friend Billy the Kid and killing him, because Billy the Kid is an outlaw. And it's just about these two guys who used to be friends. And they sort of still are friends, but that's not going to get in the way of them trying to kill each other. And it just has this really haunting tone to it. It's got a soundtrack by Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan is also in the movie, which is kind of weird because Bob Dylan is not a good actor. But he's playing this kind of like weird guy who's like tags along with Billy the Kid. And
does he sing in the movie, or is
he doesn't sing in the movie, but his songs are on the soundtrack.
Okay.
It's kind of like, have you ever seen McCabe and Mrs. Miller?
Oh man, yes, but when I was like 14 and I don't really remember anything about it.
The movie has a soundtrack by Leonard Cohen, and it has Leonard Cohen songs over the action. So it's sort of like that. This would actually make like a good double feature with McCabe and Mrs. Miller, because they both have that sort of like death of the Western sort of tone to them. But I really loved this. There's actually like multiple versions of the movie. There's a theatrical release. There's a 50th anniversary release, which is the one I watched. And then there's like an alternate cut, which I'm probably going to go back and watch soon, because I liked it so much. I'm very curious to see how different that is. But the version I watched, the 50th anniversary cut, is just phenomenal. It's just, the movie is just loaded with great like Western character actors showing up. And for like one scene and killing it. And, I really like this a lot. Like it completely blew me away. Like, I'm sad it took me this long to watch it.
Well, you've convinced me. I'm adding this to my list right now. Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid is the name of the film. And it's available on the physical disc through Criterion, or is it available streaming on the Criterion channel website? Do you know?
It's not on the Criterion channel. I think it is streaming somewhere. I'm going to find out right now.
Okay.
Actually, it's not streaming anywhere. You can rent it on Apple TV Plus, but otherwise, okay. I would really recommend just picking up the physical disc if you're a physical disc guy, because it's worth it.
Okay, awesome. All right, well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about probably all of these movies that we've talked about on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a few things in the show notes too. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really, really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By honoring your sacred vocation of business, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. At Grand Canyon University, our MBA degree program is 100% online, with emphases in business analytics and finance to help you reach your goals. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.